I didn't do much with myself. I didn't really. Kids do give you focus. Family gives you focus, responsibility, all those sort of things. So it was like, actually, was it a way of the world saying, fucking hell, Rob, step up? Like, that's the way I looked at it at the time.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Let's do this. Welcome along. It is the Still Parents podcast supported by Global's Make Some Noise. We are live from the Still Parents podcast studio. Sorry, I'm just padding here while Ryan plugs back in everything that I unplugged before we went live. Sorry, mate, I forgot to put that back in. There we are.
I was just looking at the screen thinking, where's that light gone?
Yeah. You well?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
We haven't got Matt in the studio with us tonight. Matt Whitehouse, also a regular on the Still Parents podcast. He's joining us on Zoom. Let's just check he can hear us. Matthew, are you there?
Hello.
Matt, why aren't you with us? Why are you sat in a garage?
Because it was Rob Lindley's 10-year wedding anniversary, didn't finish long ago, so okay. I wouldn't have got across in time.
In other words, you couldn't be asked.
Yeah, be honest. Have you had a couple of beers?
I've had a couple, but that's all. Yeah.
I just love the fact he's sat in a garage. He's been banished to the garage.
If it's the first time you've listened today, we'd love it if you could follow us on our socials, or you can also have a look on our website, which is stillparentspodcast.co.uk. Just search Still Parents Podcast in your app store and you will find us there. And if you get a moment to give us a review, I normally leave this to the end, but that would be really helpful. It just makes it easier for other people to discover the podcast and hopefully provide some support and maybe get people on as future guests. If that is you, if you'd like to join us, you can come on for an entire episode. You can join us just for a few moments, whatever you need from us so that we can accommodate you on this show, because that's why we set it up, particularly but not exclusively for men, because of the whole cliche that men don't talk enough. As we always say, we do, but we talk quite a lot of what, Ryan?
Bollocks.
Yeah. And we found that sometimes it's during those chats of absolute bollocks that we actually get to the point that we need to discuss. It's quite conducive for those conversations, and I find that to be the case. Rob Castledon, joining us in the studio tonight. Thank you, Rob. How are you? Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, good, thanks. Good, thanks, lads. Good to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Well, thank you very much for coming in and being here in the studio tonight. If you are watching live and you would like to ask any of the guys in here, in particular Rob, our guest tonight, any questions, or just drop a message of support, whatever, at any point, Ryan's keeping an eye on the chat. If you're listening back to this at a future date on the edited version, you can still reach out. We can still get a message over and deal with that on a future episode. Just DM us through our socials or, again, through our website. Now, we have met before, haven't we, Rob, a few times? We did the Wolf Run together, didn't we, a couple of years ago? Yeah, I think a couple of times.
I know this is going as well, but I've seen you a few times, mate, and always a pleasure. We're getting well.
Actually, it's a fair point you mentioned, because at the start we said this whole kind of light-hearted comment of men don't talk enough. We talk a lot of bollocks, and it was during that, before we knew each other, and we're running through, so the Wolf Run is like an assault course, 10 kilometers in and out of lakes, over all sorts of obstacles. It's mud, piss, shit, you're covered in it, and you're just running along, and we get talking and we're chatting a bit of bollocks, as you do, and before we know it, we're talking about vasectomies.
Yeah.
You know,
snip, snap, snip, snap, snip,
was that when you got out of the cold water?
Yeah, I've just had nature's vasectomy. Yeah. Well, it's good to see you again. Yeah. Now, obviously, you're in here because of tragedy. You've lost a child. And thank you, first and foremost, for coming in to talk about it, because it's not easy to do. There's more than one tragedy involved in this particular episode. What you went through within a short space of time, absolutely horrific. We'll start, we will go back, because like you said, it'll be the 10th anniversary at the time of recording next week of your son, Gabriel. As we ask every single guest, and we'll hand it over to you, take as much time as you need and just talk us through the story with you and what happened leading up to the loss of your boy.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, thank you. We had a son already, married with Rachel, and then we had Matthew. So, as you'd expect, sort of a normal family, looking to have a second child. And 31 weeks, or just beforehand, again, normal checkup. There's a little bit of a not a concern on their face. Not in, in hindsight, you notice these things, but you don't at the time. And again, yeah. I'm sure lots of people here, the nurse says, actually... Yeah.
Brian's nodding.
You couldn't quite sort of hear a heartbeat or couldn't... And she's like, oh, yeah, it's, I'm sure you'll be fine. Just if you go down to the hospital. So me and my wife's like, okay, we'll do that later on. Like, really just very relaxed, just thinking, yeah, they...
So you weren't overly alarmed, it was just, you're wary.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And I think even just thinking, well, looking back to the previous weekend, we'd been to a friend's wedding, and Rachel had just not felt enough movement.
Okay.
And I think maybe going back years, and Ryan and Martin, they will know more about this sort of thing, how things have changed, but it was, like you taught, obviously, if there's not as much movement, you should have 10 movements a day, whereas now it's more about what's normal.
Yeah.
If your child's always moving around, that's the normal thing. If they slow down, then so so it was only the weekend before, not a bit much movement. Rachel had a lie down. Is it your lie on your left or your right? I can't remember.
Left.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. And felt a bit of a move. So yeah, apart from that, everything's pretty much as normal as you'd think it would be. So. Fast forward a couple of days, go for the normal check. The nurse is like, right, I'll just ring through to... We're down at Warwick Hospital. We live up in Solihull.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just bowling down the motorway, just normal, having a bit of a chat. And then you get into the room and one nurse goes in. Obviously, they're not... I think they're trying not to panic you, clearly.
Yeah.
But you get there and they're like, oh, yeah, we've been warned, right, coming to this room. So someone comes in. They can't hear anything. Someone else comes in. I think after the third person, I guess more senior, each one's more senior. And then we are really just like, what's going on here?
Any communication with you during that? That you can remember?
Do you know what? I can't. It probably is a bit of a, well, it is 10 years, but I think at the time, yeah, certain things just do get blocked out. So I think it's more just, one person comes in, disappears, someone else, and then you've got a room sort of full of people who basically said, there's no heartbeat, and that's it. So that's going to hit, as with a lot, it just hits you like a ton of bricks, really. But I can't really think...
It sounds like such a casual throwaway thing when, like, like it's just a normal everyday, but then to hear those, because then you've got to take it in, believe it, accept it.
I think, and that's the thing. You just sort of, it just stuns you, absolutely. And it is quite hard to think back to the emotion at that point. There's different points following that and afterwards.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was even thinking just the other day before we came on this week, we've both gone to pick up Matthew from nursery. He's in the nursery. So... Even obviously, Rachel's by that week, 31 weeks, she's showing. You can see she's having a baby. So even the one of the employees had made a sort of a bit of a jokey comment about Matthew being doing something ready for his little brother or sister and something like that. And it's just those little moments. You just look at each other and just, it was pretty upsetting. But as with obviously Ryan and Amy and others that. Clearly, in the whole Lily May group, there's lots of people where you've lost for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, some have gone full term, and then there's an issue. But for the ones that are told, you've then got to go away for 2 days and then come back. And again, that's another pretty tough thing to go through. Because you're still there, knowing. But also thinking, are they right? Is it sure? Like, you know what I mean?
Yes. Well, we've mentioned this, haven't we, Ryan and Matt? That whole thing of... Do you believe it at first? Because I'm not sure. There's stages in there, and isn't it the first one of any sort of grief? Is it denial?
Denial.
Is this real?
Yeah. Anger. Yeah.
Accept. Strangely enough, not my. I think of every life experience, but there's very much a Simpsons episode which is on one of those. I don't know if you've seen where Homer's going through this, whatever it was, and literally within like 10 seconds he's displayed everything. it's like wow, this is amazing.
Simpsons is mad fun, isn't it? You know, you get at least one news story a week about how the Simpsons predicted something in the future.
Yeah, and even then, in those couple of days. And there may be people listening, and maybe the baby is still moving around, and that's the thing. Because of the water still in there, so
your mind is
going through a lot of stuff. Because you then, and I'm thinking, well, when we were at my friend's wedding, for example, and couldn't feel much, but then there was some movement. Does that mean he'd already gone then? You don't know. When did it happen? Your head's just going through all sorts. It literally is.
Well, you're internally asking questions that there's no way you're going to be able to answer. Because it's conjecture, isn't it? Speculation, especially with that. And then, being able to feel the movement after what you've already... emotionally, that's tough.
I always remember Amy saying that she felt that there was still movement, and they call it phantom movements. Like Rob said, because you've still got the amniotic fluid there, the baby will still move. It's just not obviously the type of movement, like the kick or the roll.
It's still going to play tricks on your head, though. Like, it's wrong. Everything's fine.
That was probably the most horrifying thing for me. I remember when we were told was that you had to go home, and the horrifying thing was knowing that your dead child, it was just... That's what I could not get my head around from the point of leaving that hospital.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. I know we've spoken about it before, and there's, you don't know. I mean, at that point, because you've never been through that before, it's not like I would have spoken to a group. It's certainly not as widely publicised or awareness, again, that you... So what happens now?
Yeah.
You're told, there's no movement. Yeah. You're sort of thinking, literally, what do we do? What's the process? Have a whatever pill to induce and those sort of things. So, again, tough 2-3 days.
What sort of conversations, if you can recall, it's a tough question, and how you and your wife were supporting each other, or the initial ways that you were reacting to what's going on? Because you're doing it together. Like I say, you've still got Matthew.
Yeah. I'll be honest, I don't know. In those, there's snippets you do remember. Obviously, the focus, because we've got Matthew, and certainly some of the group therapies we've done afterwards, is very different if it's the firstborn that you may have lost versus subsequent, because then there is still a focus. You've got to go through. But yeah, I mean, I'd only recently started a new job in a company where there's two of us both sort of stood up and going, oh yeah, we're expecting a baby, and the other kid's also expecting one, and then roll on 6 weeks, and I'm ringing my boss the next day just saying, yeah, we've lost Gabriel. So yeah, it's just awesome. You've got to still hold on a job, you still got to function, basically.
I think that's part which gets overlooked quite a lot, is because there is the immediacy of it, what happens in those, that next day, 24 40 hours, week. In particular, when, like you say, you've got the child there, and at that age, no understanding of what's... How old was Matthew at the time? What, one?
A year and a bit, 15, 16 months,
But nothing... nothing can prepare you for that moment either. Like you were saying, Dan, about the fact that what do you do next, the next step. The only comparison I can make, because we didn't go through what Rob has gone through as far as the way it happened as well, but I knew that it was all on me at that point to then tell people. And I'd never done anything like that before. So how do you do that? And how do you break the news to people? How do you understand it? So it's a very confusing... confusing, I think, is a bit of an understatement. But
It was 2-3 days.
Yeah.
And then from that point...
Yeah, that was also... a very... it's a horrendous moment. And again, there's going to be lots of parents out there that are going into hospital knowing they're not going to come out with a baby. That's as simple as that. And to go in, and yes, Warwick Hospital did have a different room. I can't remember even what it's called now. But there is a suite where you go into. But you've still got to then go in. It's not like a totally separate part of the whole hospital or anything. Still part of the maternity wards. And you still put in at the time to a room literally next door to new crying babies, everything else, the rush of everything else going on. So
it's crazy how many times we hear that from all over, with guests we've had all over the world with that particular scenario.
It is. It's horrendous to think back. And maybe times have changed. We're 10 years on. I don't know. There may be, again, people who have experienced something different in different hospitals.
It has in lots of hospitals, but it still happens. It still happens. And it comes down, a lot of it comes down to funding and finding the space within the hospital network that's close to the maternity unit as well, where if, something was to potentially go wrong as well, that you're close to somewhere to be able to get immediate support. But there are, I mean, like, I just think of Heartland Hospital straight away. They've got the Eden Suite, which is completely separate to everywhere else. So you do not hear screaming babies, what have you. The only difference is it's by the gynae wards and it's by the maternity unit as well. So even though it is completely separate, it is still within the vicinity of, you know.
Yeah, you can still sense it, isn't
you
it?
You can still sense
the environment that you're in.
But again, you know, the Eden Suite's brilliant and there are other hospitals as well where they have got other designated areas, you know, put aside for brief families.
Did you, because you said you hadn't long started a new job.
Yeah.
How were you with that? Did you take time off?
Yeah, we're very good. And I've always had a job. I've been a financial advisor for many years. So it's always been a flexible job. It's not a 9-to-5 where you have to be on a rotor or on a phone line or whatever it is. So yeah, at the time, boss at the time was really good.
But with your mind, like, were you wanting to spend time in that place, you know, that work zone?
It's quite hard to focus. Certainly, to focus on it. There's certain parts of the job. Again, I probably didn't go and see any clients for a few weeks.
Right.
I think over time, different clients know about my situation. I think it's helpful to do that. You're asking stuff about them. And actually, that was quite, I don't know, interesting. But certainly, you speak to some people who themselves are in their maybe 70s or so, because they'd known me, you know, been my client for a couple of years beforehand. And they know, talk about family, expecting our second. And so they ask those sort of questions. Oh, I haven't seen you for a while. How's the second? And
you build a rapport within your job, isn't it? Because it's a relationship. Yeah, it's a personal thing. So you're going to have that relationship that's built. Yeah.
So again, you get those difficult situations, like lots of people would. But then they're telling you stuff about them. They were like, actually, we'd gone through the same 40 years ago. Mm. So our son, daughter, whatever, would be 40 years.
So it becomes like a mutual counselling to a degree, isn't it?
Yeah. But you can see how actually time has changed significantly. I mean, you're talking decades, but the one person that I spoke to is like, it's never been mentioned. Like, literally, child's been sort of taken away and just not ignored, but certainly not spoken about.
Yeah.
That's a massive step change, I think. Not that I was alive 40-odd years ago. Well, only just. But do you know what I mean?
Definitely
awareness, talking, everything is an important element now.
So, social structures, isn't it? Yeah, and we've mentioned it before with the whole, especially looking at the guy's angle. A lot of guys might not have even been in the hospital. I don't think my old man, he was pissed as a fart.
Right,
I think
exactly. It's generational differences, isn't it? And it is generational differences.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think my dad was out there getting drunk. I think I said this before. He turned up to the hospital after, you know, a bit tipsy, looked at my tag and then freaked out, ran down the chasing after the midwife saying his name's not Barry because they'd wrote baby, you know, baby Kelly.
Barry.
And he thought I was Baz Kelly. Yeah.
I'm called you Barry from now on.
Called you Barry.
All right, Moby.
Hey, Barry.
Stay in your garage. The funny thing is, in another 40 years, that'll be the attitude about where we are now and how archaic or out of touch what we're talking about and how we're going, this is all quite, you know, improving.
Do you reckon though people be then saying we share too much? It's like TMI. It's just like everyone is talking too much. Obviously, clearly mental health is an important factor, and then people be looking back and going, actually, that's probably a little bit too much. Everyone,
do you know what? I
don't know.
Yeah, interesting.
Do you know what? I genuinely wouldn't be surprised if eventually something like that does happen and people say that people are talking too much.
It's like a revolt against social media, isn't it? It's going to get to a point where it's just the other side.
I think the thing, though, with mental health nowadays, people, I liken it a little bit to COVID, when COVID was around and people were going back to work. It was an easy way of getting out of work. I've got COVID. So it was like, I've got to stay.
I never did that. I don't think I had COVID.
Are you owning up to something?
No, but most people, well, I worked for myself, didn't I? So it wasn't like...
Give yourself a disciplinary.
Yeah. But I genuinely believe there were people, there were people...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
...who phoned up, said, I've got COVID, and the rules were that you isolated, stayed at home. Mm. I do think some people use mental health in that way.
Yeah.
Because it's an invisible thing, isn't it?
It's hard to quantify, isn't it? If you say it, and because of the stigma around it, it's like, okay, well, you can't really do anything in case. Yeah,
exactly.
So people can abuse, and that means the genuine patience from it. Yeah,
it dilutes over time.
Yeah,
and then we get societal fatigue around something like mental health or whatever.
It's societal fatigue. I like that.
Give a go.
Love that.
Very good, that one.
But it's but also it's, hashtag, it's the old bad back analogy as well, isn't it? You know, you can say you've got a bad back, but actually you can't tell if somebody's got a bad back or not, can you? Yeah. Because it's, you know, they can put it on and say, you know, I'm sore and what have you. Mm. But it's, I do think, I do worry that one day that, yes, fatigue will, fatigue, sorry, I've got to put that back in again.
Look at his face when he says
Giacco one.
Is that your word of the day on the calendar?
You that's know, my word of the day. I'm finished now. See you later.
So that's the point that we're at. So this is...
Yeah, it's a few days after. And even for the next, obviously going through the... back to the hospital, finding out. Mm. Obviously, they go and do the, not an autopsy, but certainly an investigation as to why, and understandable. And then you're looking at, was it a genetical thing? You're then worrying yourself about those. Obviously, Rachel did take the time off work.
How did that turn out? Was that...
Again, their employer was really great, and the people good. In the, those, there's no issues with that at all. And it's probably, I think it...
Was Rachel a nurse?
No. She worked at part of like the Law Society.
Yes, I do remember now. Yeah.
And
finance and law.
Yeah, no, so it's great. What a fun couple. but no, seriously, it was a strange time to think back on.
Of course.
We did have the support there, but even like the memory box which you get given, it wasn't. From a memory, because everything is sort of just a bit of a blur.
Yeah.
I can't remember seeing the Lily May tag or whatever at the time, the name Lily May Foundation.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until, because we live in Kenilworth and obviously we're in Borstal Common, and we went back and we just asked the hospital, oh, it's a memory box. Oh, that's like, thanks very much. It's really nice to have. And then they explained actually where it was from and the reasons behind that. So all that, I don't know time frame. It might be a month or so later. And then you've got to organise the funeral and is it private? We did keep it private. I know, like, I think Ryan's, yours was very public. You had a lot of people there and again, works for different people.
It's got to do what you need to do.
There's no right or wrong and we just felt that, we just keep that sort of to ourselves. And then, I saw the flyers for maybe even the first Borstal Common run. Was that 2014 or was it the second? I don't know.
Yeah, it would have been 14 because this year's our 10th one.
So we saw just like on one of the notice boards, Lily May Foundation run. We're thinking, oh, wow, okay, that's interesting. And we're then looking into Lily May a lot more. So basically I've made a promise to myself then and to Gabriel and to Rachel, like, as long as they're doing the fun run, I will be there and I'll do it as long as I can run it or walk or if I'm still 70 or 80 or whatever.
Yeah.
Again, I think a lot of people probably do things, get challenged or just to say, look, I'm doing this for them. I know Matt a lot. Mm. Ryan, you set up a charity, you know what I mean? and Matt's a lot regularly doing for stuff. Cali, they'd be very proud. So you do want to make your son and daughter proud of you.
Well, of course, and it's that legacy, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a lot still to unpack here. Did you have the conversation? How soon was it about to try again?
It was reasonably soonish.
Yeah.
And listening to a couple of podcasts of yours, then it probably was only maybe 4 or 5 months in, maybe 3 or 4 months in later on, because you're sort of prepared for and you want to have. But then there is that, is it a guilt? Is it like you sort of people perception of you have another one and even the subsequent child maybe looking back and going, would I have been here if Gabriel was still here? And I'm sure, again, you've probably all spoken this. I know you have.
Yeah.
So we did, and Rachel was pregnant again, and that is probably one of the most... It is the hardest sort of thing. Ooh. The rainbow babies, and they really may have support groups as well for those. And then you sort of think back, actually, Matthew, in the first instance, was about 5 weeks early.
Oh, okay.
So although at that point we didn't think anything was
bad. Sorry, I've just realised, yeah.
Yeah, so then you're sort of thinking, actually, was there... Like, we'd just gone in for a normal checkup. We joined an NCT group and we'd end up going to this NCT group for the first time. The second meeting, we went in for another checkup with Matthews, and they were like, oh no, you're not going to leave hospital. Again, the heartbeat was just not as they would want it to be. It was not perfect. It was like fine for ages. Yeah, get those Doppler things, or I forget laser terminology nowadays. And they would just suddenly stop, like just for a bit, and they'd be like, oh, and you see the scan, sort of the little flicky thing, and they just nothing for a split second, and we were like, oh. Well, it picks up, all fine again.
Yeah. Mm.
But again, the doctors are obviously thinking something. So even that with the first, with Matthew. So fortunately at that point, they were like, yeah, we're just going to have a C-section and that's it. So pulled him out 5 weeks early. You see the size of him now. If you've seen him, he's 11 years old. He's 5'5" or something. So if he'd have gone full term,
Sorry, how tall did you say he was already?
He's about 5'4", I think.
My goodness. You'd be taller than me next year.
He's tall. He's tall.
But you're tall. How tall are you?
About six.
Get out of here.
Depends what shoes he's got on.
Yeah, my heels on a Saturday night.
When he's got his flares on.
Go ahead, Matt.
I said, Dan, everyone's big to you, aren't they?
So. Yeah, everyone's tall. Yeah.
Matt's shooting tonight, isn't he?
It's because I know he can't strike me.
I know where you live, mate. We'll come around and lock you in your garage.
You know what? You know what it is, Dan? It's because he's had a few beers and he's feeling brave.
That's why, you can only see him from like the chest up, aren't you? He's sat in his garage. Yeah. He's got a tray of beers. He's not even got any pants on. I know he's not. It's the first podcast he's done half naked.
Really? Not right there.
You okay with this so far, Rob?
Fine. No, as I said, it's been a long time. It's been 10 years.
Yeah. So
I've told various parts of this, people, and it's one of those. It's part of my life. That's it. It's not sort of shy away. And
yeah. Well, with that in mind, because there was, you had another loss.
Yes. Yeah. So I think the subsequent pregnancy with Daniel, who's here, he's eight, nearly 99.
How tall is he?
Yeah, he's big as well. Yeah, for an 8-year-old, he's... But yeah, that paranoia, and again, lots of parents on here would recognise that. It's not a nice pregnancy. Ooh. You're just on edge. You're like, you get into different points. Is everything okay? Would you have extra scans? So we roll on to pretty much a year from when we lost Gabriel. So 2015, Rachel's gone for a couple of checks. Thought she'd found a lump a few weeks earlier, been given the sort of all clear in terms of saying actually it's pregnancy related, and then went back, and almost a year to the day of losing Gabriel, we found out she had breast cancer. So, and pregnant, obviously, with Daniel. And this is where it's quite hard in terms of, certainly on the dad's WhatsApp group, where you've got people going through that second, subsequent pregnancy, and they're wanting reassurance from the guys, going, oh, I'm doing this, really worried. There's no way I can give that reassurance. And I was saying to Amy again in the office a few weeks ago, my story is shit in that respect. Yeah, that was, three not normal pregnancies, but Rachel battled on. Actually, there's all those if buts and maybes and things like that. If it had been caught earlier, actually they couldn't have done anything. So because if you're in your first two trimesters, the baby's still developing, it's still that. But actually, in terms of when you learn all these things with cancer treatments and stuff like that, third trimester, she was actually having chemotherapy. And it's amazing how the womb, the placenta, the body can actually still protect your child, having been given effectively poison to try and... So Daniel is very healthy now, and that was suddenly turned into another... The roller coaster, I mean, from 1 year to another. Obviously not easy. We then had to try and plan the next few weeks of the rest of the pregnancy and to try and get Daniel out safely in between different chemo sessions. We'd elected a particular day, which was the 17th of September, to try and run in with the chemo sessions. And I probably haven't told you guys this, but we were back in the same room where we found out about Gabriel.
Oh my gosh.
Now, they wouldn't have known. And I'm sure there is not only one room in Warwick Hospital. So we're sitting back in this room, like, waiting. And then they're saying, oh, we next in, and like, we were there first thing in the morning. And they said, oh, we've had an emergency. So we'll come in from a different hospital or something. Come in. We're like, okay, well, we're sitting there waiting. We've timed this. And there's another emergency. And it's got to the point, I was not in a good place, clearly. But yeah, for a nurse to come in and basically say, oh, we've had another emergency, and I'm sitting there going, hang on a minute, Rachel's life's at danger.
What's
here.
This?
Yeah. At what point are you seeing this as a any sort of priority? So after a couple of things, basically, we were sent home that day to come back the next day on the sort of absolute promise that Rachel would be treated as an emergency. Because it's like, look, you don't know what the other emergencies are. It's a bit different, I understand, but you're there as the dad, as the husband, want to protect your wife, your kids.
There we are.
And that's it.
And it's that whole thing that Ryan, we mentioned it a lot, especially Ryan, you want to fix it, you can't. And then you're in that place, you've been told to go home.
Yeah. So I didn't want to start kicking off, but equally it was just like, well, this is ridiculous. Like, at what point is she going to be treated as any sort of priority? Because anybody could come in, and if other hospitals are struggling, whatever it is, I don't know. But actually, this is our situation here.
Yeah.
And we're now sitting in a room where a year ago we were told we'd lost Gabriel. So, but Daniel was born, again, another C-section. And Rachel battled and fought and had various treatment and trying to hold down a job, look after a newborn and another one and a wife and keep it all together. I don't know. Yeah, part of those year or 2 years is, I don't know, one, not that I don't remember any of it, but clearly it's not one that I would ever say was the worst time of my life.
Mm.
Because we got Daniel out of it. Do you know what I mean? So it's a really mixed emotion.
Do you know what? Before I came in tonight, I said to Amy, this is going to be a tough podcast, because I still remember vividly right the way back to...
Well, you met Rachel, obviously.
And I'd met Rachel, and obviously we as a charity were supporting them. And to hear that news... It was like, how can the world be so fucking cruel? That's how it felt. It was like, how can this world be so cruel? And I know Rob hasn't said the inevitable of what sadly happened with Rachel just yet. But I remember having the conversations with Rob after when he used to come to the office for... It weren't even... like planned. It was just you came in just for
just by,
a bit of respite, weren't it? And and you'd just come and sit and talk and stuff like that. And tough, really tough, because that just to me just it does. It shows the world is a fucking horrible place at times.
How do you come back from that?
I've thought about this a lot over the years, and again, we are talking 8 years since Rachel died as well. Yeah, I think, I mean, resilience probably is one of those things.
Have you always been considered yourself a resilient person?
I don't know. No, I think I was much more laid back, and whether it's children, I think there's a lot of things that I've looked back on. You do take stock and there was definitely those sort of, not self-pity, but like, why me sort of thing. And I actually thought, well, why not me? Like, I haven't done anything. Like, I'm not a God or whatever. I think I've done amazingly in life, I didn't think, that would mean I should be immune from something like that. And again, I'll just roll on a bit, but obviously Rachel passed away 4 days before Daniel's first birthday. So we're on another year. So it's a 2 years of, again, lots in the middle of that, and some's hazy, some's not. And you got to, as the father of the house, the one who should be, and I wasn't, I mean... Health-wise, I'm much healthier now than I think I was back then, and certainly back in my 20s. And that's probably something I've then looked back over the years and thought, actually, I didn't really do much with myself. I didn't really. Kids do give you focus. Family gives you focus. Responsibility, all those sort of things. So it was like, actually, was it a way of the world saying, fucking hell, Rob, step up, like, but okay, give you a load of shit to do it. Life's shit, and that's ultimately...
Wow, okay, right.
That's the way I looked at it at the time.
Do you know what as well, yeah, though, yeah, is that Rachel has basically given the ultimate sacrifice,
yeah,
not through choice, because it wasn't through choice, was it? Because of the first and second trimester, and she's given the ultimate sacrifice for her boy, for her baby, and that is just that just brings tears to my eyes, because that is selfless on so many levels. And like you said there, it's 8 years. I can still to this day remember the first day I actually saw you, like, belly laugh and it was about 4 years after Rachel.
I wasn't on the Three Peaks.
I saw Rob belly laugh, and it was at that point where, and I hadn't seen it.
Were you wary of moments like these on your mental state going through the various stages of grief that you were at? It's like, oh, how did you feel? Like, you go, oh, I'm feeling quite happy today. Because your mind plays tricks on you. But yeah, what I mean is you almost stop yourself because you feel as if you shouldn't be.
Yeah, exactly that. You just sort of like, not feel guilty, but certainly like... Actually,
question if you're doing the right thing.
People would, but yeah, and... You just don't know what other people's lives. I mean, so early days from losing Rachel, and it was literally the first day of Matthew's school, so he's 4 by then, first day of September. Mm-hmm. So I'd be going to school, and everything's going through my head, pushchair with Daniel going in, and I would be just pretty much crying every day on the way back doing that, just thinking how unfair.
That's just fucking horrible.
And not unfair on me, and it's self-pity, that's one I've just tried to avoid. And people have sort of, oh, I feel so bad. It's like, don't feel bad for me. Feel bad for Rachel, not seeing her boys grow up. Feel bad for the boys, not having their mum to see them grow up. But then, eventually, I don't know however long that took, a few weeks maybe, you're looking around the playground and stuff, and you're like, I don't have a clue what all these people's like. There's going to be trauma going on in every single household. Yeah. And I'm not going to list all sorts of potential.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right, though. Who knows what's going on behind the curtains?
And that's when it got back in terms of like, actually, why me? So why not me? Why? Like, I really don't know. You just got to do what you can. You've been put in this position. You can always look at a situation. I'm definitely a glass half
full
person.
100%.
Get it the right way around. and just be like, actually, I could be going through all this and something even more shit happens.
But you clearly are. You've got this calmness about you, have a presence about you, and you've just said it yourself, the glass half full.
Well, thank you. It's taken a fair bit of time to get to that position. Yeah, I certainly wasn't in a good state for a year or two. I think you are just running on an element of autopilot, like you've got to do it.
Yeah.
That's it. You literally, like, I think partly because I'd...
But you still have to,
I've got 2 boys. That's the responsibility side, so there is no choice and stuff. And I think I do work better under pressure.
Okay.
But then there's a point, too much pressure.
That's right.
You will just...
Yeah, it's so true. There's that balance, isn't there? Yeah.
And I've probably felt like that over the last few years. Actually, is everything suddenly going to explode? Like, at what point do I then reach out and again take some counselling? Lily May, I've had sort of 3 different ways, counselling sessions, or not just sessions, but series of, at different points.
You still?
No, that's probably over 2 years ago was any time last. And again, they're different types. One wasn't so good. Amy's really good. That was sort of early days. Just going through that and just trying to piece together and just take a step back. But you're still in that sort of, actually, got 2 young boys to sort out.
Yeah.
I've got a job to do. It's got still bills to pay, et cetera, et cetera. And also make them proud. And try and do something else in the meantime. But if I had I had good support, again, which is important. Lots of people do. I did have good support. Lots of people don't. So again, those I'm trying to look at the positive side of stuff.
We found with friends as well, some people use this, the support comes from people that are in your life, but you didn't expect that's the person that all of a sudden in that moment steps up, and maybe someone else who you thought could. It's different the way it brings us back to our very first episode, that elephant in the room, because I think a lot of people just freeze and they go, I don't know, maybe the best thing to do is nothing at all and to leave them to it. And then it's the whole, so many different avenues you can explore with the personality types and how they react to different people and certain traumas and situations.
Yeah, I think actually psychology is one of those, and we do this at work a bit, and you write personality types in a way, and I, even over the last few years, and even dealing with your own children, you get to know what they're like, and even they change a little bit. So yeah, it is.
Yeah, as soon as you figure out what they are, it changes to the next stage, doesn't it? Wow, here we go again.
But no, I think definitely people have commented on this before about the support you think you have, like a good families. I'm not mentioning names. Good friends and stuff like that who are no longer, and other people that you've only met. I mean, there's lots of people I know now who have never met Rachel and never will, obviously. But there are people that have had the pleasure of and some of the people I thought would have given more support haven't. And again, I'm not mentioning any.
It's like an acceleration, I think, because the relationships and friendships evolve naturally anyway, you know. But I think with the intensity of the situation that you then find yourself in on more than one occasion, it brings it about in maybe a quicker way.
Yeah, and I think, and certainly one of the things over the last few years, you listen to different podcasts and stuff like that, and self-help, but one of the great things that I'd read or heard as well was life is like a train journey, in the sense that lots of people are getting on and off. Some people are with you right next to you for a long time of that journey. Some are only there for a short part of it. Some are sort of at the end of the carriage, like in the background, but you can sort of call them. So it's a real great...
And then you've got the ticket inspector.
Someone coming on and booting you off or something. But yeah, no, it is that.
Unless you're clever and you get off at the next stop and run to the back.
Yeah, just hide in the toilet for the old journey.
The toilet with no ticket.
Done that a few times.
I tried to shave my head on a... Sorry, so tangent here. I tried to shave my head once on a train to London. Never doing that again.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did that turn out then?
Yeah. It was like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, probably.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Rob. Before we finish this episode, and if you don't mind, because I know there'll be people wanting to, and I'm curious about this as well, just to bring back up to 2024, with everything that you've gone with your boys, with the loss of your wife, it's relationships now. Did you want to get back into them? Are you in a relationship? Tell me to fuck off. I'm not asking you out.
No, I'm in a very good relationship now. I think it took a while, and probably before lockdown, I was in a relationship. It was quite a long one, but again, COVID is a strange time.
Lockdown love, they called it.
Yeah, and we were sort of together beforehand. And again, you try online dating. I didn't have time for anything else. I haven't got the time to be going to bars and sit. So the online dating type of thing. But no, I was with someone for a bit, and you thought life was going in a different direction. So I was due to move house and move areas, etc. And that didn't happen. Again, not going to go through all the reasons, but actually that was a sort of, not quite a turning point. It was another reflection point of, not the grief necessarily, but it's where you think your life's going to go and it doesn't. So there's similarities are there. You think your life's heading this side. It's clearly going to be quite hard for anybody and I've always said to friends and family, there's a difference between a single parent and a sole parent. If you've got sole responsibility, that's a massive difference. And for people who are single parents, or they're divorced or whatever else, that's probably maybe daunting, overwhelming to be like, you know, I've got a bloke here who's just literally 24/7 with these and their young kids. So a couple of relationships. And then last year, I was like, actually, that's it. And I was in a good place mentally, physically, keeping fit and doing all the various challenges. And shortly after, well, maybe not shortly after last Rachel, but I did join a widowed and young group, sort of charity. So you've got... Right. I think it's those things. You're going through a grief. You're going through something, a trauma.
So that's what makes you like kindred spirits, I guess.
You want to try and reach out to someone who's got connections. So Lily Mae was that, but equally with the widowed and young, in a different way,
a romantic.
I wanted to find for the boys mainly, because I didn't want them feeling too different. There's nobody in the school. I don't know when you grow up. By the time you were at secondary school, things like that, there probably is someone who's lost a parent, maybe. Mm. I certainly remember it.
Yeah.
At the age of 4 or 1. Mm. There's nobody in the school in that. So I joined the sort of widow union. So actually, I wanted to be doing some child sort of stuff, groups and things like that. It didn't really happen. There was, meet up with a few others that have lost a little bit. But I just went back on, and there was this group over at Worcester. They were having a meet up and going and walking on the Malvern Hills. I just checked that there was a few children going along with that, and my boys got on very well with Lauren's boys, who is now my good lady. But again, the key bit for me was it wasn't there. We wasn't looking for a date. It wasn't a dating thing. It was more about actually connection.
Yeah.
And the boys would get on very well together. And actually, it turned out that she'd also had a stillbirth. Quite a few years earlier. So I think it's just that connection. That's not a reason. It's more that we can speak, and you just felt that over a few...
Just organic, isn't it? Just,
months, exactly that. Months, actually, we were just doing stuff together as just two parents of children, but having a good chat, and we did, and it's gone on from there,
good,
really.
Good so, is that a place that, in your darkest moment, you could see yourself where you're at now? And you're still on the journey, of course, but...
Yeah, I think it's just strange. You don't really know what life's going to throw at you. Mm. That's literally it. So as much as you can always plan, and in my job, you're doing planning, and one thing I do say, without giving too much, is just like, well, you don't really know. No plans are going to work exactly as you are. So you've got to be able to adapt. You've got to be able to just take on board something really shit that's going to happen potentially, and try and look at the positive side of that. Now, there's going to be some situations there literally is no positives with, and there's, again, in all sorts of ways. But actually, there's a lot of things that some people would look as negative, and at that time it is. Mm. And eventually, you're looking back and going, well, I wouldn't have thought I'd be in the position now. If you did roll back 10 years, like literally 10 years now, I was at a friend's wedding and married and second child on the way, and to then roll forward 10 years...
Yeah.
But I think I'm in a good place, and we just got to keep trying to be happy.
You're an amazing person. It's true, because it's good to have a structure and good to have a plan, but you can't have it to that military precision, because not everything will happen. You've got to roll with the punches, as they say, and through it. So, thank you. Is there anything that you would like to say, or anything that I haven't asked you want to talk about, Ryan or Matt? Is Matt still here?
Matt's buggered off. Where Matt's gone.
Gone to the offie, hasn't he?
He's gone again.
He's probably run out of beers, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thanks for inviting me on. Again, I'm obviously known. Thanks for the support as well, Ryan. I mean, it is invaluable, and I've always said I do what I can, firstly to remember Gabriel.
Yeah.
But for the charity, which is always going to be something that I'll always recognise. Again, work, you know, they had the football game earlier on. I've put them forward at work to be our office charity, things like that.
Which
up to now you've raised, it's just over £15,000, isn't it, up to now? Yeah,
15 grand.
Which is absolutely amazing.
stillparentspodcast.co.uk is our website. Still Parents Podcast. You can find us on our socials. If you do have a moment to give us a review, we really, really would appreciate it. Thank you so much.
The Still Parents Podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.